Well, hello, hello, guys, and you're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I am delighted to be interviewing very well-known author, mom, and master of meditation, Malika Chopra. And we're going to bring you all kinds of questions and answers to interesting ideas about how to be mindful in the modern world. So say hello to Malika.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Malika, many of my followers and listeners on Instagram are young. They're in their 20s, and they may not have heard of the meditation movement. So tell us a little bit about your background, your family, your dad, and growing up in a very meditative, mindful environment.
So I come from a family where when I was 9 years old, I learned how to meditate, and that was a result of my parents discovering meditation. So even though we were Indian and my parents came from India, I was only here when my father, the well-known author Deepak Chopra, really was having his own midlife crisis and turned to meditation. So my family learned at that time, as did most of the Boston Indian community, because we were steeped in that community in Boston. And it really became a tool for self-regulation, for self-discovery, for dealing with stress and anxiety, and most importantly, for feeling secure and discovering who I was. And so I'm very grateful to meditation. And for those that aren't familiar with meditation, meditation and mindfulness are practices steeped in wisdom traditions that either help you be more aware of your body, your mind, or what's happening around you, or using mantras and sounds and different techniques to just quiet your mind and get more inner peace.
Interesting. And I am also, of course, Indian, and I probably grew up not meditating, but now I'm finding the beauty of meditation as my life gets more chaotic and I need that 5 minutes of inner peace every day. What's a good way for people to just start entering into the idea of meditating or purging their mind of busy thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think that it's a misconception that in meditation we're purging our mind of thoughts. We don't empty our mind. Actually, what we do is we quiet our mind. And those are two different things. Whenever you try to empty your mind of thoughts, you probably will have more thoughts. So I think a lot of people associate meditation as something that they can't do, that they can't sit silent, that they can't empty their mind. Meditation practices there are many different traditions. The ones that I practice that are taught through the Chopra Center often use a very simple word or sound, just repetitive. So often I just suggest the words I am, and just to mentally say them, and when your mind wanders away from the sounds, which is normal and natural, just to come back to the sound. And there's a whole science behind why these sounds help you settle down. But you can also just stop, take deep breaths. So a very easy exercise actually is around the acronym STOP, S-T-O-P, which is stop, take three breaths, observe what's happening in your body, and then proceed. So meditation can really just be a way to pause and shift from the normal fight-flight reaction we often face in our daily activities to more reflective reactions to situations.
Part of having like the 4-7-4 rule of breathing, like breathe in for 4 seconds, breathe out for 7 seconds, and breathe in again for 4 seconds. And I find that very balancing and calming. I have patients do that right before I give them shots sometimes.
Yes. So breath is very powerful. In fact, my last book, which is called Just Breathe, is a book for kids 8 to 12 year olds. But I'm finding a lot of adults are really enjoying it because it has really simple meditation practices. And there are many different breath practices. You mentioned the 4-7-4. There are different ones for sleep, for cooling down, for dealing with kind of buzzing bees in your head. So there are many breathing techniques which are really simple that can be really effective.
Now, I have 4 kids, and I'm not sure if I could really convince them at that young age, the age of that your book is written for, to actually sit and do anything meditative. So how do you even make that happen?
So I feel strongly that we can never force our kids to meditate. So the most common question I get asked, and I'm speaking at a school today, about how do we teach our kids to meditate? And I believe strongly from my own experience that actually parents need to role model, and parents should be meditating if they want their kids to meditate. More and more, we're even seeing the research around anxiety and stress often comes from parents. When I go to schools and I ask kids about their daily activity, almost always 9 out of the 10 answers about what is stress is them describing their parents. So I'm a big believer in parents role modeling. I wrote this book for kids because I discovered meditation when I was 9, and it became a tool that was my own special tool, and I wanted to write a book where they can discover it by themselves. So it may be in their school classroom, it may be in their library, it may be something their parents give with them, but my hope is that, again, parents are role modeling rather than just telling their kids what to do.
Tell me what you think about, like, the whole social media generation. I know that I have an Instagram account. I check it way too often, and I see my kids doing the same thing on Instagram and Snapchat, and the stimulations that we get now are so fast and furious, and they say that the average human attention span is 8 seconds, and that you can't even barely create and consume content before there's new content. Like, you barely digest it. So can you speak to what you think about that?
So, again, as a parent and as someone who is on social media as well, I definitely see the anxiety that it's creating, because what it does is it makes us start to judge our own value often on other people's likes or comments or followers. And hopefully, as adults, often we can intellectualize or emotionally moderate that. But I think for kids, especially kids who are in a very developmental stage, that can create a lot of insecurity and anxiety. So I think it's a real fine balance as parents. You know, I've let my kids get their social media and Instagram accounts and Snapchat recently when we all feel like they're ready to handle it, but we're constantly talking about it. And I once did a YouTube series called Perfectly Imperfect Parents, mm-hmm. and my kind of video on that was about how I'm telling my kids to be mindful and present, and I'm checking my phone. So again, it comes back down to, as parents, role modeling for our kids.
It's very hard to be mindful and present when you're in your phone.
It really is.
It is. And I think that's part of our practice today as a society, is that we're in a society that's full of noise and full of distraction. We're in a society where our kids and us as adults often no longer take time to just be quiet. You know, we go to yoga class with hip hop music. We go for runs with our iPods, with, you know, pods in our ears. We don't know silence anymore. And social media is just another part of that. So part of the discipline, I think, of us as individuals is to become more comfortable with silence, to become more comfortable actually with boredom, as parents, to let our kids kind of discover and play and get bored, because that's often where creativity comes from.
It's very hard to sit still. I found that I can't even, like, watch a TV show without multitasking and having my laptop and phone open at the same time and doing the curse of email. Don't you find that?
Well, I've disciplined myself, you know, as a meditation practitioner to actually not, to discipline myself not to.
Does that mean no emails? I would be so thrilled.
I think it's regulating when I check email, regulating when I check Instagram. If I'm watching a TV show, which I do often with my kids, you know, being together, not being on the phone or the computer distracted at that time. But for many people, that's hard. So what then I suggest is find other ways when you can put away the devices. So go for a walk and leave your phone behind. Or if you can't leave your phone behind, at least don't check it while you're going for the walk. When you're meeting friends or in a meeting, again, put the device away. Sometimes, you know, it takes, it may sound silly, but like 10 minutes of not being on the device to realize, like, the world's not going to fall apart in that 10 minutes.
It's true. When you go travel and you don't have Wi-Fi, you realize that you're actually enjoying and engaging more. And it's okay to wait till the afternoon to answer all your emails if you don't have Wi-Fi, right? How is it being a mother and being, a leader in the meditation field? Do you feel like you have to be an extra balanced mother? That's like, I know you talked about imperfect parenting, but it would seem like you have the stress of not only being a perfect parent, but also like being a very calm, gracious, and serene parent, not ever losing your temper.
So my last book, before I wrote the kids' book, was called Living with Intent, My Somewhat Messy Journey to Purpose, Peace, and Joy. And the messy part is really important. And in that, I share a lot of my struggles and, kind of how I've sought to find more balance and mindfulness in my life. And I like to stress because of my family background, because people assume since I'm Deepak Chopra's daughter, I'm really calm and peaceful and don't get angry and frustrated, and I absolutely do. And so I like to remind people that, there's a mythology of what you think of people and then what people actually are like. And I just like to be really honest about that. You know, like everyone else, I struggle with everything from being mindful, but even with my diet and with work and balance, with relationships. But I think I try to be honest and authentic about, one, that I struggle with them, but two, that I really do make a commitment to be aware of, what's happening around me, what's happening in my body, what's happening in my relationships, and bringing a presence to that, to pause and reflect and find inner peace, to then bring that to my family and my community.
Is it stressful growing up as Deepak Chopra's daughter? Like, there's a lot of big footsteps to fill. Did he kind of expect you, did your dad expect you to join his business or, kind of follow in his interests and passions?
No, not at all. In fact, I have a younger brother, and I think a lot of other people had expectations about us and preconceived notions about us. So, for example, they would assume that we were vegetarian and that we did yoga, or, we'd be caught at like a Coke machine getting a Coca-Cola, and they'd say like, oh, we're going to tell your dad, and we would laugh saying, well, we're getting it for my dad. And so, I think there's the outside perception. I'm very lucky. My parents, my mom and my dad, we're all really close. We're good friends. And they let me and my brother really kind of find our way. My first job out of college was launching MTV in India. And I met my husband at a rave in New Delhi, so it was hardly what people expect of a Chopra kind of life. So yeah, no, we don't really live with that preconception. And I also, I feel like I'm really lucky to be born in this family. I've kind of found a path of writing and speaking, but it's very different from kind of what my dad speaks about, because I'm talking more about balance and kids from a woman's perspective, which frankly my dad can't talk about. And so I feel like I have the privilege of being in this family, and with that privilege comes, an opportunity and a responsibility to serve and to share. So that's really how I approach it.
Mm-hmm. And will you continue on his work with the Institute? And
I'm not involved in the Chopra Center, the Chopra Foundation, but my brother and I both realized years ago, we tried working with my dad at both of us at different points in our life, and we realized that for healthy family relationships, that didn't make sense. So we are always there to support my father, but we do not get involved at all in the daily business, either of us.
And then how is it to become a writer? That's such a huge undertaking. What is your writing process like? It sounds like you've written so many books and so fast and furious. Do you write every day? What is your writing routine?
So, my journey as a writer has been over the last 15 years now. So I think I've got more momentum in the last 3 or 4 years, but I've been writing for quite a long time. I wrote blogs, I had a website, I've written books, so I do have 5 books out now. But it's really, my process is when I'm inspired by something, I dive deep into it. And then I kind of sometimes it takes time to come up with the next inspiration. So, you know, when before writing Living with Intent, I had 3 or 4 years of really thinking about that, and then I wrote it, put it out in the world. And then the kids' books was an opportunity that came, you know, to me, and I'd always wanted to write books for kids, and so I jumped on that. So for me, it's really, it's a ebb and flow of sometimes it's really busy. I'm not the kind of person that's disciplined to write every day. I need a deadline.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once you have a deadline, the words flow, right? I'm a procrastinator, too. But your current book is written for children to read specifically. So what are your recommendations? Like, what age should you show that to kids? Or it probably is really good for high school and college kids, I imagine, too.
Yes. So again, I begin with it begins with the parents, not the kids. So it really begins with an individual's journey of kind of saying, this is something that's important to me. And by default, then it becomes important to your family. So that would be my first piece of advice to anyone, is if you are stressed, if you are anxious, if you're seeing that in your family, do some soul searching about what you can do. Then for children, children watch their parents, children watch their teachers, they watch other mentors in their community, and they will often then be intrigued. What's interesting about kids today is so many of them in their classrooms are already doing breathing and yoga and different techniques. So there's nothing new about this for many kids. It's actually much more natural. And kids are so much more innocent about sitting down and just feeling their bodies and letting their thoughts wander, that there's no intellectualization that adults often struggle with. So it comes actually much easier to young kids. As someone who has teenagers, I've realized I can't force ever my kids to do anything, but if I give them the tools, they may discover it, or sorry, they may use them when they need them. So my kids will never admit to being regular meditators, but I know that sometimes on the bus, sometimes when they're more stressed, sometimes when they need to kind of find better sleep, they use their meditation practice. So I've kind of presented those tools to them. And that's the goal with the books, is to give the kids the tools directly.
You kind of stumbled upon them meditating once in a while, caught them in the act of meditation. That would be so wonderful, right?
Yeah, no, my kids are very open and proud of, again, the family that they come from. And I do so many things in their schools and other places. So they have a pride in that. And my younger one is, you know, really into yoga and actually martial arts. So also has kind of demonstrated physically how you can incorporate a lot of mindfulness practices.
Talk a little bit about how I see every day that our mind is so powerful, that the stress and anxiety of the mind really impacts the health and illness state of the body. So I think a lot of adults internalize their head more than they need to, and that impacts their bodily health. What do you think?
I mean, 100%, my father's, you know, really started the mind-body connection conversation 30, 40 years ago. And at that time, he was considered like the witch doctor who was selling snake oil. And so he, you know, and now so much research and science is showing whether it's just regular stress and anxiety or inflammation due to things like that is really creating health problems. So one place to begin, just like with diet and exercise, is with meditation and mindfulness practices, which research is really showing the benefits both on a physical and emotional level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see it a lot. I think people tear themselves up, and they don't realize that the stress of their hair falling out, they're not sleeping well at night, that it turns into, it wreaks havoc on the body, the face, the beauty, and then it makes you, you know, you're tired, you start eating poorly, you try to eat your energy, you gain weight, you have a poor sleep cycle. So it's really an epidemic in America anyway, in every country, more than likely. What are 3 tips that you could give our listening audience on how to be happier?
One, find a practice that you can do quietly that brings you peace. So if it's not a meditation practice, maybe it's going for walks, in nature. Maybe it is dance. Find a practice that is your own practice that works. Second, connect meaningfully with loved ones, because community and especially real connections, even with one person, can make you much happier and also healthier. And then third, on a daily basis, ask yourself, what am I grateful for and how can I serve?
So mindfulness and thankfulness. Yes. So are you a person who keeps a daily journal, or do you believe in journaling or writing down what you're grateful for every day? I see a lot of people doing that. I haven't quite tried myself, but
gratitude is very powerful and very, very healing. I don't keep a daily gratitude journal, but I try to set an intention every morning when I wake up of a quality that I want to experience in my life that day. I also, at the end of the day, before I go to sleep, think about something that I'm grateful for.
That's perfect. I like to plan my day, and I'm a type A woman and a surgeon, and I often want to plan like my 5 or 6 things that I have to get done that day to be efficient. Do you have any efficiency tips? Because you can be a mindful, meditative person, but you also have to be, to some extent, successful. You have to achieve. You have to teach your kids to get out there, to get good grades, to get to a good college, to get a good profession, a good living. So how do you reconcile that side of life?
So I have written a book called Living with Intent, and in there I outline a path to intention and distinguish intentions from goals. Intentions come from the soul and represent our aspirations, and goals are very task and end goal oriented. So in that path, the last step of the path is to take action. But before you start setting goals and becoming obsessive with your daily practices, I think it's really important to understand why those are really important to you and what are the qualities and why are you pursuing them. So I really believe it begins with intention, and then there is a time for smart goal setting, but that comes later.
That's difficult when you're young, because I have kids who are in college now, and people are asking them, like, well, what do you want to do with your life? And what do you want to major in? Who do you want to be? What do you want to be when you grow up? How do you even know? Like, you don't know. It's hard to set your intent when you're asked these big life questions and you barely know who you are as a person.
So, again, I think there's a misconception of who you are and the labels of who you are versus who you are inside. And so when I was young, my father used to have my brother and I say a phrase which goes like this: I am responsible for what I see, I choose the feelings I experience, and set the goals I will achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. And he would ask us as kids, what do you ask for? We'd often ask for material things, and he would say, well, what about asking for love, connection, inspiration, a sense of purpose? And so I believe as parents, we can guide our kids to ask for the qualities they want in their life. And through that, then they nurture their passions to find the professions that will suit those passions. And I think that's very hard to do and seems strange to do in many of the communities that we live in. I know your kids, my kids go to very academic schools. They're very driven with a sense of success and purpose, but we're also seeing that many of those kids are really depressed, are really anxious and stressed. We're seeing tragically more suicides in colleges and with teenagers. And I think we have to do a lot of reflection as parents and adults in this time about, are we really nurturing kids in the right ways? And so I think it's a really hard conversation for many of us who live in that world to really reflect upon.
It's difficult because on the one hand, you can talk to kids about what do you really want in your life and these wholesome values. But on the other hand, they're surrounded by materialistic, affluent peers who have like expensive purses and cars and things. Everybody wants things. The Kardashians are making this into a thing society. Mm-hmm. So I just feel conflicted. It's like I'm dealing with people who want beauty all day. And I love the idea of delivering beauty, and it gives confidence. It makes a person feel whole where they have holes in their self-esteem. But also, I don't want it ever to be superficial and narcissistic and just driven by materialism. And so I guess that's the battle that we face in this society, right? Mm-hmm. We both face that. What's your beauty routine?
My kids always laugh at me because literally I don't have a routine.
I'll give you one.
They really get upset with me, but I basically use water and regular soap and then like Pond's cold cream. It's what my grandmother used and my mom used. My kids are totally into major beauty routines, but I feel like for now, it's been okay.
Well, just so you guys listening can know that she has flawless skin, absolutely no lines, and just looks like you look extremely glowy and fresh. So whatever you're doing, it's the Pond's cold cream.
Yeah, exactly.
I often tell my patients, so we are the first generation of women to have anything more than oil of olay and Pond's, but maybe that's all we really needed, right?
Yeah, no, again, we call it in my house Nani cream. Nani is my mom's mom, and they call my mom Nani, which is really, that was what my grandmother used and what my mom used, and now what I'm using. My kids are like on a whole different path, though.
Yeah, that's right. Now you have 10 different ingredients, but definitely it's good to use some vitamin C in the mornings and some retin A at night if you want to add anything good to your routine. I would add those two things. Are you a person who would ever think of doing injectables or Botox or filler? Or, I know that's very far removed from your world, but I thought I'd just ask.
I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to plastic surgery. For many years, and I think I've written and talked about this as well, for many years debated getting a nose job. And then it was interesting. My father, my brother, and my husband were all anti it, but my mom was like, totally, if you want to do it, go for it. Yeah. And that was a really insightful, just kind of gender bias, I think. But what I realized for me personally, like I said, I have no issue with anyone doing it. For me personally, when I became a mom with two daughters, and I started to really tell them about beauty as I was aging, and talk about inner beauty and weight, which so many of our girls are struggling, you know, with body issues. I realized that for me, the best path was not to do anything so far. And so I haven't done anything. I really don't have a need right now to do anything. I really try to focus on my, you know, exercise, on my food, on being outside. I'm very fortunate of where I live, so can get healthy food, but who knows what the future holds.
True. I have three daughters and one son, so I also am very conscious of that conversation, because if you fixate too much on external beauty, then you're sending a message too to people that they have to be a certain way to be regarded a certain way, and I don't ever want to have that. But I do like the idea of beauty maintenance, that your body is your vehicle for the next 80 years. There's no way you'd drive a car for 80 years and not put some maintenance in it. And I think just to maintain, you know, your freshness and confidence, it's very important to take care of your once a year or twice a year, do some nice things for your face and your skin. Because I don't know about you, but I start to feel run down even if I let my gray hair start to go, you know.
Yeah, the gray hair is, I'm obsessed with my gray hair because I basically, it comes every 2 weeks. So yes, for me, that's something, you know, and it begins, I think, you know, definitely with the grays, thinking about one's teeth, then, you know, you can go on and on and on. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. It's unending. And women have so much more maintenance to do than men. It's just not fair. Mm-hmm. So my daughter sometimes says, it's not fair, Mom. Why do we have to shave and pluck and wax and guys don't have to do anything? Like, that's, I guess, the way of the world. But it's been so nice chatting with you. And I definitely want to increase my mindfulness and teach my patients about your philosophies. So I will bring that to my children, my home, and my practice. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk with us. Where can my followers and listeners find you?
So thank you so much for the conversation. And, you know, I'm basically on all social media. So at Mallika Chopra, Mallika Chopra.com.
Yeah, and so find her on the Instagram. And then any last tips for meditation? If you've never started, you've never done any meditation and you're brand new to this, what's the first thing you can try?
Well, one, don't get stressed about it because that takes away the point. And I would just say begin, find a two-minute practice that works. And that may just be sitting quietly and focusing on your breath.
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. 4 seconds in, 7 seconds out, and 4 seconds in. Thanks so much for tuning in. You've been listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And don't forget to find Malika on all her handles on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and her website. And you can find me on Instagram at Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, doing amazing things with people's faces. And don't forget to find my skincare at www.beautybydrk.com. And I'm going to send you some vitamin C because it's so healthy and good for your skin, and some of my hydration serum, which I think you'd really love. So that's it for now, everybody. Stay beautiful and mindful. Bye.